You know, there's this this very specific fantasy that I think a lot of us have at some point.
Oh,
If you're
absolutely.
walking through your neighborhood, or maybe you're just scrolling through the news and you see something that is just, it's objectively broken.
Right, like a park overflowing with trash.
Exactly. Or you hear the local after-school art program just got its funding cut entirely.
And you get that spark.
You get that rush. You
Yeah.
think to yourself, this is ridiculous. I can fix this. I should start a nonprofit.
Yeah.
It's this almost romantic movie moment where you quit your job, gather your friends, and just change the world.
It is the founder's myth, and it is incredibly powerful. It's this idea that passion plus effort naturally equals change. Like, if you care enough and you work hard enough, the problem will just get solved.
But we are doing this deep dive today because that equation,
Yeah.
the passion plus effort thing, is actually missing a massive variable.
A huge one.
And without it, that romantic story often turns into a total tragedy. We're looking at a source today that effectively argues that good intentions on their own are actually kind of dangerous.
That is a strong way to put it, but honestly, it's accurate. So the source we're breaking down is a field manual. It's titled How to Conduct a Needs Assessment in 7 Easy Steps for Startup Nonprofit.
Quite the title.
Yeah, very descriptive. And it posits that before you buy the domain name, before you file the 501c3 paperwork.
And definitely before you start asking your grandma for money.
Yes, exactly. Before all of that, you have to do the unsexy work.
The unsexy work being proving that the problem actually exists.
Proving it with data, not just vibes, and proving that the solution you have in your head is actually what the community wants. Because nothing burns through cash and goodwill faster than solving the wrong problem.
So today we're talking about the needs assessment, which I will be honest, sounds like the driest, most bureaucratic term imaginable. It sounds like homework.
It completely sounds like homework, but think of it as market research for doing good. If you were launching a tech startup, you wouldn't build an app without checking if people actually wanted it right.
Right, of course not.
Yet people launch nonprofits all the time without checking the market fit. The needs assessment is the bedrock. It's the difference between throwing darts in the dark and turning on the lights.
I love that. So the mission for this deep dive is to walk through these 7 steps. We want to take that vague, I want to save the world energy and run it through a filter until it comes out as a concrete strategy.
Let's do it.
So step one of the manual is titled Define the Aim. But it starts in a way I didn't really expect. It doesn't start with the community. It actually starts with the mirror. It asks, why are you doing this?
Right. It's the introspection phase. And this is critical because helping people is not a strategy. It's a sentiment, it's a nice feeling, but the manual is very firm on this. You need a purpose statement, not just a goal.
Okay, let's unpack that distinction a bit. What's the actual difference in practice between a goal and a purpose statement?
Okay, so let's say your goal is I want to help kids.
Okay, no.
Noble, right? And no one is going to argue with that. But operationally, it's useless. It's way too broad. You will drown in possibilities. Are you tutoring them? Are you feeding them? Are you providing mental health support? Teaching them to code.
You're just paralyzed by choice at that point.
Exactly. So the source uses a great example of how to tighten that. Instead of helping kids, the purpose statement becomes addressing food insecurity by establishing community gardens in identified food deserts.
Wow. Okay, that is significantly different.
It is. And here's the key insight. The specificity is what gets you funded. Donors don't write checks for good vibes.
Right, they want to see the plan.
They write checks for specific solutions to specific problems. But even more importantly, specificity protects you, the founder, from burnout.
How does being specific stop you from burning out, though?
Because if you know exactly what you do, like building gardens in food deserts, you also know exactly what you don't do.
I see.
When someone asks you to organize a clothing drive or a math tutoring session, you can say no without guilt because it's not your mission. It prevents mission creep, which is honestly the silent killer of startup nonprofits.
That makes so much sense. You're building boundaries around your benevolence so you can actually be effective.
Precisely. You just can't be everything to everyone.
Okay, so we have our specific aim. We know what we're doing. Step two is establish a team. And this is where the source confronts the lone wolf mentality. Why is it so bad to do this alone? If it's my vision, shouldn't I be the one doing the research?
Because you have blind spots, we all do. If you conduct a needs assessment by yourself, you aren't really finding the truth. You're usually just confirming your own
You
biases.
just see what you want to see.
Exactly. You need a team to check your assumptions.
Now, the manual suggests the usual suspects for this: friends, board members, local stakeholders. But then it drops a really interesting tip about a specific group of people to recruit, university students.
Yes, this is a huge underutilized resource. The guide specifically recommends reaching out to social work or social science departments at local colleges.
Why them specifically? Yeah. Just because they're young and have free time?
Well, that helps for sure. But there are two really strategic reasons. One, they need field experience for their degrees. They are often actively looking for projects to put on a resume.
That makes sense.
Two, and this is the really clever part, they have access to academic databases that you don't.
Oh, right, the paywalls.
Exactly. They can pull demographic reports, historical data, sociological studies that would literally cost you a fortune, but they get it for free through the university library.
That is brilliant. So you're getting free labor, but you're also getting institutional-grade research power.
Right. But there is a caveat on the team composition. The source is very explicit about diversity here. And it's not just for optics or to, you know, feel good. It's about data integrity.
Oh, so?
Well, if your team is five people who all live in the same zip code, go to the same church, and shop at the same grocery store, your data is going to be incredibly skewed.
You're in a bubble.
Yeah, you might miss entirely that the community speaks a different primary language, or that they don't even use the internet to find services. You need cultural and demographic variety on the team to ensure you're actually seeing the whole picture.
That is a great point. It really is about accuracy. Now, managing this team, I mean, these are volunteers. You can't just bark orders at them like they're employees.
No, morale is your currency here. The source suggests using tools like Slack or Trello to keep the chaos down, because nothing kills volunteer enthusiasm faster than a messy email chain where nobody knows what they're actually supposed to be doing.
Oh, absolutely.
But also it mentions appreciation gatherings.
Which is code for pizza.
Pizza goes a long way.
Yeah.
You have to keep reminding them that this dry data collection, like filling out spreadsheets, making phone calls, is actually the foundation of changing lives. You have to connect the grunt work to the mission.
Okay. Team is assembled. We have our students, our community members, and the pizza is ordered. Step three. This is where we put on the detective hats. Collect existing data.
Yeah, I call this the armchair detective phase. This is the biggest efficiency hack in the entire process. Before you go out and spend hours interviewing people on the street, you need to see what data already exists.
Because chances are the government or a large NGO has already counted the population, right?
Exactly. The source lists these treasure troves. Things like census data, United Way reports, school district homelessness data, public health assessments. This stuff is public record, but most people never even look at it. It's just sitting there waiting to be used.
There's a strategic reason for this, too, beyond just saving time. It's about avoiding duplication of service. Can we unpack that? Because that sounds like something a funder would definitely ask about.
Oh, this is the number one thing funders look for. Let's say you want to start a food pantry. You look at the data and you see there are already three food pantries in a 5-mile radius.
So your idea is dead. You just pack up and go home.
Not necessarily, but your original idea is dead. If you just opened a fourth pantry, you're fragmenting the resources. You're just splitting the pie. But maybe the data shows that those three pantries are only open 9 to 5 and your target demographic works during the day.
Oh, so the gap isn't food. The gap is access.
Exactly. So now your nonprofit isn't a food pantry. Maybe it's a verified evening delivery service for the existing pantries.
That's so smart.
You've moved from being a competitor to a partner. You are a gap filler. That is what a needs assessment does. It refines the mission from a blunt object into a laser.
Speaking of refining the mission, the author shares a story in this section that really stopped me in my tracks. It's about a graduate school project in a quote-unquote wealthy county.
The wealthy county paradox. I love this story because it completely shatters assumptions. So the author is assigned to do a needs assessment in the richest county in the state. The assumption going in is, what problems could they possibly have? Maybe the country club needs new tennis nets.
Right. It's affluent. The lawns are manicured. Everything looks totally fine on the surface.
But they dug into the school district data, specifically talking to school social workers, and they found something shocking. There were thousands of students experiencing homelessness in this wealthy area.
Thousands? In the richest county? That just seems impossible.
And here's the specific nuance that the data revealed. It wasn't just that they were homeless. It was that the existing shelter system in that county was segregated by gender. Men's shelter on one side of town, women's shelter on the other.
Wait, so a family, a mom, dad, and kids would have to split up to get a roof over their heads?
Exactly. And for a family already in trauma, splitting up is non-negotiable. They wouldn't do it. So they weren't using the shelters at all. They were sleeping in cars, in campgrounds, or just bouncing between cheap motels.
That is a massive invisible gap. The resources were technically there, but the policy made them completely unusable for families.
And it was invisible because nobody looked at the intersection of homelessness and family unit infrastructure.
So what happened? Did they build a new shelter?
Well, that's the long-term play. But the immediate solution, the gap filler, was brilliant. They realized they couldn't build a building overnight. That takes millions of dollars and years of zoning.
Right.
But the data showed they had a lot of local religious congregations with massive empty halls at night. So they created a network where families could stay at a church for a week, then rotate to the next one.
Wow. So the needs assessment didn't just find the problem. It identified the resources to solve it immediately without having to build a new facility.
Precisely. It turned a hopeless statistic into a solvable logistics problem. That is the power of step three.
That is really powerful. Okay, so we've looked at the spreadsheet. Step four is where we actually go outside, gather new data. This is talking to actual humans.
Primary research. This is where you validate what the spreadsheets told you. You're doing surveys, focus groups, one-on-one interviews. You need to hear the actual voice of the community.
Now, the source warns against asking the wrong questions here. It says, don't just ask, what do you need? Which, frankly, feels like the most obvious question. Why is that bad?
Asking what do you need is a terrible question because it's too open. You'll get answers like, I need $1 million, or I need a new job, or I need hope.
Right.
And those are valid feelings, but they aren't structurally helpful for a startup trying to design a specific program.
So what do you ask instead to get actionable data?
You ask about barriers. What prevents you from getting fresh food? How long does it take you to get to the free clinic? Do you feel safe walking to the bus stop at night? You want to map the friction points in their daily lives.
It's almost like doing user experience testing, but for a neighborhood.
That is a perfect analogy. You're looking for the bugs in the civic system, and you have to be very careful about who you ask. The source is huge on inclusivity here. If you only survey the people who show up to a town hall meeting on a Tuesday night, who are you missing?
You're missing the single mom working the night shift, the immigrant family who doesn't speak English, the person who doesn't have a car to drive to the town hall.
Exactly. If your data doesn't include the most marginalized voices, you aren't really designing a solution for the people who need it most. You have to go to them. Laundromats, bus stops, clinic waiting rooms.
There's also a trust element here, right?
Mm-hmm.
The source mentions that listening is an intervention in itself.
It really is. When you ask someone about their life and truly listen, you validate their experience. You stop being the savior swooping in with a solution from on high, and you start being a partner. But you have to mean it. Don't be extractive. Don't just take their stories for your brochure and disappear.
Which naturally leads us to step five,
which
might sound a little boring, but it's actually all about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Manage contacts.
The administrative trap. You meet a community leader, you write their phone number on a napkin, you lose the napkin. That is a disaster. That person could have been your biggest advocate.
So we need a system. The source mentioned CRMs.
Customer relationship management. It sounds super corporate, but it's essential. You need a central brain for your organization. The source says Excel is fine to start, provided you use data validation, so you don't end up with just a mess of unstructured data.
But for those who want to level up the appendix, mentions Salesforce.
Yes, Salesforce is the gold standard. And here's a massive tip for anyone listening. Salesforce offers 10 free licenses to eligible nonprofits.
Wait, 10 free licenses?
Yeah. It's an enterprise-grade tool for literally $0.
That is huge. And there's also TechSoup mentioned, right?
TechSoup is legendary in the nonprofit sector. If you are starting an organization, go to TechSoup immediately. They verify your nonprofit status and then give you massive discounts on software, Microsoft, Adobe, Zoom, QuickBooks. It can save you thousands of dollars.
But with this database comes a pretty serious warning. The source gets very strict about privacy here.
Informed consent. This is non-negotiable. If you are collecting stories about, say, domestic violence or addiction or legal status, that data is radioactive. If you leak it, you can destroy lives. Yeah, you need to strip names, anonymize data, and use secure passwords. You cannot be sloppy with people's vulnerability.
Absolutely. Okay, we've done the work. We have the team, the existing stats, the community interviews, and it's all organized safely in a database. Step six is transform data into insights.
This is the aha moment. You have a mountain of raw information. Now you need to find the story hidden inside it. You need pattern recognition.
The source recommends a team day for this. How does that practically work?
I love this specific tactical advice. You get your team in a room, but, and this is crucial, you ask them to analyze the data independently before the meeting.
Why is that important? Why not just brainstorm together from the start?
To avoid groupthink. If the loudest person in the room says clearly the problem is X, everyone else just tends to agree. If everyone comes in with their own notes, you get a much richer, more honest debate. You want to see if everyone spotted the same trends independently.
And what are we trying to produce in this meeting?
Your ranking needs. You have to triage. What is the most urgent need? What is the most impactful? And realistically, what is the most feasible for us to solve right now?
That distinction between immediate action and long-term strategy seems really vital.
Yeah.
Going back to the wealthy county example, the immediate action was the church rotation. The long-term strategy was a dedicated shelter.
Right. If they had waited for, the shelter families would have been on the street for another 3 years. If they had only done the church rotation, the problem would never be permanently solved. You really need both. Your needs assessment should give you a right now plan and a 5-year plan.
That feels so much more manageable. You don't have to fix everything by tomorrow.
No, you just have to start the work.
Which brings us to the final step. Step 7, share findings and mobilize. This is where we go public.
Transparency. And this is surprisingly counterintuitive for a lot of founders. You are essentially sharing bad news. You are publishing a report that says, look how much our community is struggling.
They're kind of airing the dirty laundry.
In a way, yeah. But the source argues this is actually incredibly good for business.
How does that work?
It validates your existence. If you can show a donor, look, 40% of families here are food insecure, and here is the survey data to prove it, you aren't begging for money anymore. You are offering them a chance to invest in a verified solution. You are proving the market.
But you have to code switch a bit, right? I mean, the report you show a bank is different from the one you show the neighborhood association.
Absolutely. For funders, you want to highlight the data validity, the strategic gap, and the ROI return on investment. Like, if you give us $10,000, we can feed 500 families because we have the trucks and the route already optimized.
And what about for the community? What's the pitch there?
They want validation. They want to know they were heard. The message there is, you told us this was the problem. We listened. Here's the plan we built with you. It builds ownership. And if the community feels ownership, they will fiercely protect and support the organization.
And the source mentions that the report isn't the end of the line. It's a tool.
It's a calling card. You walk into the mayor's office or a corporate partner's office and you slam that report on the table, gently, of course. It completely changes the dynamic. You aren't just a person with a dream anymore. You are the definitive expert on the problem.
So to recap the journey for you listening, we moved from a vague why to a specific aim. We built a diverse team to check our blind spots. We mined existing data to avoid duplication. We listened to the community to understand actual barriers. We organized our contacts carefully. We turned that raw data into immediate and long-term strategies. And finally, we used that data to mobilize real resources.
It really turns a chaotic emotional process into a logical step-by-step roadmap.
It really does. The source ends with a lot of encouragement saying you can absolutely do this. And honestly, breaking it down like this, it feels doable. It feels like a job, not a miracle.
It is a job. And the world definitely needs people to do it. But it needs them to do it smart, not just hard.
So for you listening right now, maybe you're sitting on an idea. Maybe you're frustrated with how things are in your town. I want you to go back to that wealthy county example we talked about earlier.
That's the lingering thought for me too, honestly.
Look at your own community. Maybe it looks fine. Maybe the lawns are manicured and the schools seem good. But if you actually scratch the surface, if you stopped assuming and started asking, what is the invisible gap hiding in plain sight?
Who is sleeping in their car tonight in your neighborhood because no one thought to ask if they had a place to go?
That's the real question. Go find the answer. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Always a pleasure.